Hey folks, before we start this one, I would like to issue a bit of a content trigger warning, similar to the previous one I've issued before. This episode, in a bit of a tongue-in-cheek way, depicts the accidental deaths of two characters in a way that is visually similar to suicide. Specifically, there's a lot of rope imagery. If that is in any way upsetting to you, approach this episode with caution. I doubt Leslie and I will get into this too much, but we'll warn you in the episode if it comes up. It's movie star speeches and hot rye bagels on this episode of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. Against my better judgment, I'm the Ben of that.
And I'm the Leslie. This is a weekly podcast about Netflix original comedy series BoJack Horseman.
And Leslie, my pal, what episode are we talking about today?
Today, we are going to be talking about Season 2, Episode 6, titled Higher Love.
Mr. Peanut Butter and Todd's antics at PB Living have landed them in financial ruin. Unable to continue randomly investing in their wildest whims, Peanut Butter goes out and tries to get a job with nothing but a dream in his heart. Unfortunately, his agent has died in an unfortunate and sexual incident, and so PB ends up working in a shoe store. You know, that's probably not the worst outcome of that sentence. Princess Carolyn's talent agency scrambles to pick up the dead agent's contacts and clients, and Princess Carolyn finds herself with one name on her list, elusive, hermited author J.D. Salinger. Meanwhile, in a very sitcom-y plot, BoJack Horseman accidentally tells Wanda he loves her, a sentiment which she does not share. Folks,
right.
I danced around the big issue.
Yeah, you really did. Wow, you...
I managed to write a whole synopsis without covering what happens.
Oh my god. You really buried the lead on that one. And so, I would just like to go ahead and say that this episode deals with autoerotic asphyxiation as a plot device for both the A and the B plot.
Fuck, it sure does.
It sure does. Because the whole motivation behind this entire scheme that BoJack comes up with is the fact that he talked to Corduroy about his own proclivities, because Corduroy was shaken up because Mr. Peanut Butter's agent fell victim to his own proclivities. So let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. What we're talking about here.
Yeah.
We're talking about Strangle the Dirty Dangle, Blue Face Blast Off, the Strokey Chokey, the Two Neck Squeeze, one hand on the Adam's apple and the other on the Adam's banana. We're talking about him being a hardcore gasper doing the old gasping goo, or the funky Spider-Man. Yes, I wrote all of those down.
I was just about to say, listeners, not to peel back the curtain too much, but we do this via Skype call. So I can tell that Leslie's eyes are weirdly fixated on one point of the screen, which means I can tell they're reading notes.
And I am. Because I felt like we really needed to just go ahead and... We're just going to go out with it and say this is what we are dealing with right now.
I don't think we did, but go on.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm kidding. You're right.
Because the imagery is disturbing, of course, that we see twice. Once at the beginning and once at the end.
Yeah, bookends.
Yeah.
So, folks, obviously, this is the part I trigger warned about, so approach with caution.
Yeah. Basically, I'm trying to think of how to describe it, because it doesn't really deal with it as, like, it's not this hot button issue or anything. It's just kind of a joke, and it turns into a huge joke because BoJack, in his usual selfish way, decides
oh, what if I make your tragedy about me?
Yeah, exactly. And when Corduroy is like, my girlfriend would not stand for this, BoJack thinks that that's a way to turn Wanda's affections toward him in a love way, and for her to admit that she's in love with him by, like, manipulating her into thinking that he wants to autoerotic asphyxiate himself by going to such lengths as going to Lowe's but with an animal name.
That's the best goddamn gag in this entire series.
So good. To going to Lowe's, quote, Lowe's but with an animal name, in quotes, and then buying all of the necessary accoutrements to create an elaborate system for his bedroom. So, yeah.
I think the word accoutrements may be overselling it. It's lumber and rope.
And also a lemon tree and like a...
That's right!
Yeah, there's a lemon tree in there. And also like some sort of like squatty thing where he can put his... It's very Rube Goldberg-esque, honestly.
It is, weirdly. It weirdly also has a loft at the top.
True.
Like it as if it were a bunk bed or a play structure.
We're not going in chronological order, clearly, because we're just talking.
Not even remotely.
Sorry, everyone.
And I'm sorry, it's the elephant in the room, which is also a joke.
Whoa. That was a really good gag as well. That's the thing with this episode is that this episode dealt with a lot of really uncomfortable subject matter, but it had a lot of fantastic gags. I took a lot of notes on the sight gags as well. When Mr. Peanut Butter is going out into Hollywood to find a job, there are just so many in the panorama of like this Hollywood street. Like there's like a, you know, Officer Meow Meow Fuzzy Face is like glaring down at a Dalmatian in like suspenders in yellow pants, which clearly indicates that he's in the fire department. So there's like animosity there on multiple levels, and it really worked for me.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, and the sign for the Black Mamba juice that had like cleanse juice for like $49.95 and then like detox juice for $39.95 and then like grape juice for 50 cents. So it had some really, really, really good sight gags there. Oh my gosh, I have a lot of notes on this episode. Holy crap.
I definitely have more than I did for the last episode.
Yeah, me
too.
Which
was my lazy episode.
Well.
But one of our best.
Well, that's because I got to talk about Todd a lot, so that's great. Speaking of talking about Todd a lot, gonna be happening again in this episode for sure.
And the next one for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Do we want to start tackling the plot of this?
I think we need to before we go way, way off the rails. Let's do it.
Folks, there are like three inciting incidents to this entire episode. One, Mr. Peanut Butter and Todd enter bankruptcy. Because they keep wildly investing money on whims that do not ever pan out into finished projects that can go to market. Weird how that works out. Number two is that Mr. Peanut Butter, while trying to go get a job, accidentally stumbles upon his agent's corpse. And three, Bojack, which is a lot lower stakes, Bojack accidentally tells his girlfriend that he loves her.
Right, when she's leaving for the day at work. He's just like, all right, love ya. And then he's like, no, I don't.
Yeah, you know, that normal routine thing you can say to people you're close to.
Yeah, yeah, he's incapable, yeah. And that's not surprising at all.
Oh, he quite literally in that episode says, like, you make me feel less broken, like...
Actually, well, we'll get to it, but...
Yeah, well, just saying that Wanda, like, obviously, being with Wanda gives him a sense of normalcy, which is why a normal statement like, I love you, could slip out of him.
Sure, absolutely.
When he would normally perhaps be super defensive about it, and is super defensive about it, and will be for the next couple of seasons.
Yeah, yeah. I do want to just very quickly point out, right after Bojack leaves the house and is like, oh, I love you, no, I don't, what is that about? And like, kind of chastising himself, he takes a pram from takes the toddler out of the pram and like rides it down into his trailer. You may remember that toddler as a baby in the pilot episode, as the baby that Bojack noticed that made him freak out about having kids with Princess Carolyn. Just
a sight gag that you pointed out to me in like our second. Oh, our first. That's the pilot.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It was the pilot.
Our first episode. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just wanted to remind everyone about
the
ever
watchful eyes of Leslie.
I'm telling you. So a lot of my notes actually have to do with this kind of stuff because this episode was really rife with it. So another thing that I wanted to point out, when Mr. Peanut Butter and Todd are trying to pitch their bagel catcher to their accountant who's trying to tell them they're going bankrupt. The accountant goes on a tear about how they had created a movie based on the game of tag.
I wrote this down too.
Now, this was in 2015. And here we are in the year of our Lord 2018. And
there's a movie about tag.
There's a movie about tag.
Starring Hawkeye and others.
Yeah, Hawkeye and others. I should look. Oh, Hawkeye. John Hamm is in it. Wow.
I'm so sorry. My brain said, that's mean. I should call him by his real name, Clint Barton.
Yeah, clearly.
But then, I'm sorry, I do mean Jeremy Renner.
Poor old Clint. He doesn't get any respect. But yeah, no, I noticed that and I was like, oh my God. So I wanted to just quickly, little observation corner.
I noticed that too. And I literally have in my notes, oh God damn it, there is a tag movie now.
Yes, there is.
End quote.
Yes, there is. BoJack goes into work and at the end of the day, which he has tried to prolong as much as possible because he's scared of Wanda because he's accidentally said, I love you to her.
Quite literally the line, unless I'm never done working.
Yeah. Diane, you beautiful bastard. Yeah. And then he just never has to approach his problems. Sounds familiar. But he convinces Corduroy, his co-star, to go out with him. And Corduroy's like, oh yeah, I could really go with a drink. And then Corduroy reveals that this whole thing with Mr. Peanut Butter's agent has really shaken him up because he was into that really bad. And that's where BoJack gets the idea that maybe, well, he gets it later on when Corduroy's like, you got to take my kit, man. That's where BoJack gets the idea like, oh, well, if my girlfriend loves me, then she won't let me do this thing. And so, yeah. So that's where he gets the idea to autoerotic asphyxiate himself. And then, of course, meanwhile, now that Mr. Peanut Butter doesn't have an agent, he finds a job at Lady Foot Locker.
Meet your lord.
Yes, that was so funny. Lady Foot Locker, meet your lord. So he gets this job at Lady Foot Locker. And then Princess Carolyn, of course, was late because of the gravy food truck incident, because they don't sell bowls, just gravy. And so she's late, so she misses out on a whole bunch of clients that Mr. Peanut Butter's old agent had. So the only one left is, of course, Mr. Peanut Butter. Until we run into Rabinowitz. So,
because Rabinowitz gives her a tip that there is a secret client that was not on that dead agent who neither of us bothered to write the name down of.
Yeah.
That there was one client that was not written down on any of its lists, and that is elusive hermited author J.D. Salinger, who you will know, and as they make the joke in the TV show, the writer of Catcher in the Rye and other books. So Mr. J.D. Salinger, there is a great bit where, well, first of all, where Princess Carolyn kind of coyly approaches him and he just flat out admits that he is J.D. Salinger under not even any pressure.
None.
Like, he folds at the drop. There's not even a hat to drop.
I don't think he's talked to anyone in years, I think, is what is meant to be implied here. Like, she's like, okay, yeah, I want to buy a tandem bike. And he's like, I don't know about bikes. I'm J.D. Salinger. I fake my own death. Like, like, he definitely can't deal with pressure at all.
I think that's a great gag. And then moments later when they are talking with Wanda about creating a new show, and we introduce what is, honest to God, my favorite arc of this entire television program, which is the J.D. Salinger Mr. Peanut Butter Game Show, which I will reveal the name of in a moment. But just the way she hypes him up to Wanda, who of course knows who he is, but because that book came out well before she went into a coma.
But she didn't know he had died.
Oh, that's right.
Wait, J.D. Salinger died? Wait, J.D. Salinger didn't die? Yeah.
Didn't die?
Yeah.
Yeah. Rest in peace, man. Where she hypes him up like, you know, we can, with the brilliant mind of J.D. Salinger, we can introduce a brand new era of the golden age of television writing. And he just goes, I want to make a show where, you know, we ask trivia questions to celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty great. I also loved how she pitched Hollywood to him. How she's like, what if there was a place where nobody ever read and this and that and the other? And I thought that was really funny.
Right, right. What if nobody, we pay other people to read for us?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is true. Like, I mean, if you ever.
And their dream is to create stuff that no, like, they will pay other people to read, you know, like, so it's the cycle of Hollywood or Hollywood, as it were.
Well, also, if you ever see, like, people show pictures of, like, producers' offices, and there's, like, literally a mountain of spiral-bound screenplays in the corner.
Yeah.
That just so much goes into the system.
Yeah.
And very little of it actually gets made.
But this show does.
Yeah, this show does. The name of the show, again, this is my favorite fucking arc from this goddamn TV series.
So good.
Hollywood stars and celebrities, what do they know? Do they know things? Let's find out. said beautifully in the voice of Alan Arkin, which I just butchered.
Oh, it was wonderful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, Alan Arkin, who plays Lenny Turtledove, also comes back to play J.D. Salinger.
Yeah.
Which is fucking fantastic. Him and Patton Oswalt pretty much just cover every other voice, which is great.
I'm here for it. I'm completely here for it.
But, yeah, Wanda instantly approves it. She's like, great, we need a companion piece to, hey, I think you might be able to dance, or whatever the name of
Hey, I think you can dance.
Hey, I think you can dance.
Yeah.
Which is headed by Hank Hippopopoulos, who will come back next week.
In some kind of way.
Forces of Men with Leslie and Ben. Yeah, in some kind of way. That is a compliment I'll give this show. I do like how they seed these plot lines early.
Yeah.
I think in true sitcom format, where each episode is its whole enclosed story, very frequently you meet the character at the beginning of the episode who's involved at the end of the episode, and then they never show up again. Because they're either a guest star or that's just the nature of how sitcoms are written. But I do like how BoJack Horseman threads in characters that will come back once or twice and are sometimes introduced before their story starts.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Hank Hippopopoulos' main story starts next week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, next week for the show, in the next episode.
It does.
But he's introduced here early so that we can kind of get an attachment to him already before we're introduced to the conflict that character brings.
And also so that we get a deeper sense of how much Mr. Peanut Butter admires him and how long he's admired him, which is going to be very important in the next episode.
Yeah. Next. Folks, we're dancing around this episode like it's an uncomfy one, and it is. Next one's going to be uncomfier.
I know. Like, we've already gone off on two tangents about two separate things because we just don't want to fucking talk about this.
Okay, so speaking of sitcom-y plots. Well, anyway, this entire plot line is just about how kind of disingenuous Hollywood is and that... I mean, it's the nature of the beast. It's the nature of the industry. There's a reason we have, like, we're on season 20 of The Voice and...
Yeah.
Whatever indie darling TV show you like only got two seasons.
Don't get me started on that.
Like,
I told you,
no.
You can read that in my bio, in fact. Do not get me started on that. Do not.
Right. But yeah, so as I said, there's a reason Leslie gets viscerally upset about that, which is fair. But we're on like season 20 of The Voice and season 32 of Dancing with the Talent.
Right.
America's Got.
And Dancing with the Talent America's Got.
Shit. That wasn't even supposed to be a joke. I was just cutting things together
so,
in my head.
I can't fucking breathe. I'm gonna piss my pants.
Leslie, do you think we found our first t-shirt?
Dancing with the Talent America's Got. Oh.
Shit. Anyway, it's just Leslie, come on.
Sorry, I'm composed. I'm good.
It's just about finding the almost the most baseline, lowest common denominator entertainment for the broadest audience, because that's the nature of entertainment right now, is that shows that would have gotten 2 million viewers a night are now lucky to get 100K, and so you just got to cast these really, really broad nets. And that's how you get celebrities. What do they know? Do they know things? Let's find out.
They did comment on that very briefly in a joke.
In a previous episode.
Where
they're like,
oh, well, maybe we'll only get like 2.5 million or whatever.
Yeah, only.
Yeah. Which is obviously just a stark contrast from what we get today.
Yeah. Yeah, that joke, of course, is... If she doesn't say it, it's told through the lens of Wanda, because Wanda comes from an era in television where... There's less.
Yeah.
There's just flat out less. But you know, with like five primary streaming services and literally hundreds of channels of A&E and TNT and AMC and HBO and Stars and Showtime and yada yada yada, there's too much to watch in a given day for any one audience. So the number of viewers per show, you can do the math, it just dwindled.
Yeah.
And that's how everything works. That's how books work, that's how comics work, that's how movies work.
That's how it works.
Unless you're Marvel. Unless you're Disney, and then you are guaranteed a cool $2 billion
every time.
But
yeah.
Anyway, that's the nature of the beast. And that's just kind of a quick commentary on it, that if Princess Carolyn wants to make something, you know, artsy and grandiose and that has legacy, she's not going to be able to make that, because all that J.D. Salinger wants to do is make a game show. And that's all MSNBC is willing to make.
Right.
Is a game show.
Yeah.
Because it's low risk.
Yeah. So this is the seed for that entire plot line, which is a wonderful one. Yeah. And so what else happens? I'm thinking...
Well, in true sitcom-y nature, do we want to talk about... what I feel it must be a pretty standard sitcom plot, although maybe I can't think of a ton of examples of it, which is BoJack being unable to say he loves his girlfriend.
Yes.
That... I'm not going to cite specific shows because I don't know which ones actually did it, but that like feels like I'm sure that was like a 30 Rock bit. I'm sure that was a Seinfeld
bit.
Well,
it's, I'm not sure if it's sitcom specific, but it's definitely a very tried and true trope.
Yeah. I think the trope is more like, oh, well, we certainly moved quickly in this relationship. I don't know if, you know.
And I feel like the way that they handled this was in a very BoJack fashion, by adding in the element of autoerotic asphyxiation as a ridiculous, ridiculous catalyst for him to try and get her to admit that she loved him. So
here, I'll broaden what I said earlier. One partner expressing secret doubt about a fast-moving new relationship is a sitcom trope.
That's true. And I think that when she finally does stop him and she's expecting him to say he loves her too, of course he doesn't. He says, I never wanted to do this anyway. And like, I don't love you. And she's like, okay, sure you don't. Cause she knows that he does. And then he says, that's when he says, you don't make me feel less broken, which is that's a very vulnerable moment, whether he intended it to be or not. I mean, so that's, so that's actually kind of in a BoJack way. It's really tender, I think. Because we're noticing that he's finally like, trying to come to terms with what his feelings are, which is a very interesting approach and something we haven't quite seen. Of course, he's denying it at this point, but the fact that he feels the need to so vehemently deny it means that there's something going on.
Yeah. Look, your mileage may vary. I use I love you at the drop of a hat. Leslie, I feel you might as well.
I've told you I love you a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, no, that was very early on in the friendship. That's not what I mean, yes, okay, specifically with us. But, like, your mileage may vary, like, how sacred you may treat that phrase.
Yeah, sure.
For some of us, I love all my friends, I don't know what you're talking about, but for some people, it's a very exclusive term they may only use for family or really close people or whatever.
Sure.
But it's still... a thing that people don't really have like extraordinarily huge hang-ups saying, at least not to the degree BoJack is.
He's kind of only just now coming to terms, and I don't even think he's there yet. I think he's on the cusp of coming to terms with being able to appreciate himself. You know, like it's a difficult thing when you're not self-actualized. I mean, not to, you know, quote RuPaul here or anything, but, you know, RuPaul does say...
Oh, fuck it. Go for it.
But RuPaul does say, you know, if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? Which is very accurate. So I think that that has a large part to do with why he is so incredibly hesitant to admit to loving Wanda. Because how do you reconcile that when you don't have a lot of love for yourself? You know?
Yeah. And it really does slip out of him very easily in almost a routine, like, hey, I'm going to work, love you, bye.
Yeah, like, which was, that was,
you know, the way normal couples do.
Yeah, which was shocking to everyone involved.
Yeah, but BoJack, for the most part, in this series, and implied for the decades prior to the series, before the story starts, BoJack does not have normal relationships in which that normally gets said normally to other people.
And I also love the part where Todd was like, can you two stop fighting? And he's like, for the record, I love both of you. Just like,
I was
just like, I identified with Todd so much in that moment, as you know, because you know me very well.
Yeah, of course I do. But yeah, it's BoJack does not seem to have significant relationships in which that is a cool and casual thing to say.
Sure.
To the degree that it might be for other people.
Sure.
Because what do we know about his past love life? Princess Carolyn and like 100 one night stands.
Sure, basically. There's really, and of course he, you know, kind of had a thing for Charlotte, which we'll get to later, but that was unrequited, so.
Anyway, so I think You Make Me Feel Less Broken can both be written off as a ah-ha-ha depression edgy joke, but also like, the evidence does kind of pan out on that one, actually.
There's something to that, definitely.
That seems to be a little more self-evident than just a quick little self-deprecating
right,
joke.
Right, right.
It's a good show.
Yeah, it is. So what else do we want to talk about? Oh, okay. Of course, at the end, Princess Carolyn is in the group meeting, and she's very happy with herself because she, you know, resurrected J.D. Salinger. And she doesn't get any recognition because, of course, Charlie Witherspoon gets all the recognition instead for catching a bagel. If only someone would invent some kind of bagel catcher. Of course, calling back to the beginning of the episode and their latest adventures. Of course, calling back to the beginning of the episode and their latest invention at PB Livin, which was the bagel catcher. And then Princess Carolyn is on the phone with Rabinowitz, and she's complaining about how she never gets any recognition, this, that, and the other. And so then Rabinowitz says to her, you know, do you want the movie star speech? Which had gotten mentioned before. And so then she says, yeah, I want it. And so he gives her this long speech about how the story's never about all of these oppressors. It's about her because, you know, she's a movie star and this is her movie. And if, let me think of how it was said exactly. If she gets everything that she wants without having to like work for it or suffer for it, then it won't feel as satisfying and this, that, and the other. I find that very interesting because I am currently reading a book about this, and basically like this is a kind of a sort of a stoic philosophy in that like we're kind of all just the, I think I've mentioned this before, that we're all just sort of the products of the stories that we tell ourselves, and this is
sure.
This is,
oh yeah, that, yeah, sure,
this is, you know, hugely evocative of that, because this is, he literally says this isn't their movie, it's your movie. So I found that really interesting and philosophical and a little deep. And then, of course, he drops the bomb that, you know, he and his wife are going to get a divorce. So this is a moment where you start thinking they're going to go in this direction, I think, with Rabinowitz and Princess Carolyn. And for the moment, we're into it. For the moment.
Yeah, obviously, we'll be able to talk about that a little later down the line in better detail when the other shoe drops.
Yeah, yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah.
But this, yeah, the way it's framed in this episode with Rabinowitz expressing his fears that his wife is going to leave him or vice versa, or it's mutual, that it certainly does look, especially after they've been shown to have a strong friendship. Yeah, multiple times does Rabinowitz say like, hey, I care about you, kid, to another adult his same age.
Yeah.
Which is something I do.
He buys her coffee.
Do you want me to give you that speech that I know pumps you up?
Yeah.
Giving her the exclusive client list because he wants her to succeed at this company where she's been feeling left out.
Yeah.
Like it is a, hey folks, for now, it's a good friendship.
It is. Can I actually,
it is a strong friendship, and there could be a good base there for a relationship.
I actually want to point out
where this is going to go.
No, it's not, sadly, but at the time, okay. That's kind of what I want to point out though, is that we already know, folks, this is not a spoiler-free podcast. We already know that neither Wanda and BoJack nor Princess Carolyn and Rabinowitz are ever going to work out. That is not going to work out.
Yeah.
But the way...
That's the nature of television writing. That's the nature of this show.
But the way that they're presented, that each interpersonal relationship is presented in this episode, is very organic. And it's very convincing that these are... I mean, I totally buy that these are real people having real people, despite the fact that they're literally anthropomorphic animals, that they're having these actual,
yeah, none of the four people we're talking about are humans.
None of them. but their, yeah, interactions with each other and like that, the whole plot line with BoJack and Wanda and the whole, you know, have a good day, love you. No, I don't. And that whole freak out and what should I do? And also the planting of the seeds for Rabinowitz and Princess Carolyn to get together, extremely organic and honest, for lack of a better term, human interactions.
Yeah.
which I think is very smart.
I'll have to take a closer look at this because I just finished these episodes, but maybe this comparison didn't click with me as I was watching and now is only revealed to me in retrospect. But I think from what we've been shown so far, it may seem that Rabinowitz and Princess Carolyn have a healthier friendship than BoJack and Wanda have a relationship.
At this point, yes, because we... Okay. At this point, yes, because we have been presented with their interactions as friends for a few... I think he's shown up in a few episodes now. I know at least two.
Oh, it's been like three. Yeah. It's been two or three.
Yeah, yeah. And every...
And we're only six episodes into the season.
Right, but every time it's been solely platonic, but it's definitely been like there's something more there. And as someone who has experience with being an idiot and thinking that something is platonic when it definitely is not... I'm just saying.
As have we all.
Anyway, as somebody who has been through that experience, I just really appreciate how emotionally honest these interactions have been in this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Wanda, yeah. Rabinowitz makes a lot of like, hey, you know, my wife, kind of jokes. But like, you know, they at least have each other's backs. They're checking in on each other. He gets her coffee, all that jazz. Meanwhile, compare and contrast, like BoJack and Wanda are bad at communicating to an extraordinary degree.
Yeah, to the point where he's going to choke himself while masturbating just to try and get her to say that she loves him.
We finally said it.
We did. Sorry. Sorry.
Somebody had to say the M-word eventually.
Yeah, somebody did have to say the M-word.
Sorry, for our British listeners, wanking.
Wank.
Anyway,
having a wank.
Fuck.
Wanking.
God, that killed me. Anywho.
Jesus
but, yeah.
Christ. Having a cheeky wank.
Real quick, just because we're kind of running out of content. No, we're not.
That's the opposite of what's happening.
Hey, real quick, because we're kind of running out of time, although, listener, we are going to put some stuff aside on the Patreon. Do you think Wanda was just being petty, or she literally didn't care?
Well, she knew what was going on immediately. And so I think that... Sure. I think she was being a little petty. Because I didn't think she was going to go through with it. Yeah. Well, yeah. So, okay. So since we are running out of time, really, really quickly, do you have, like, anything else that you want to discuss? The only other thing that I wanted to discuss was, you know, you want to bring back our favorite gag in the episode.
Yes, I do. No, all I have to say is that I think Wanda's being a dick. And that they should...
I agree that she is.
Because BoJack clearly wants to talk about it, and anyway. That's all. That's that on that. I think I already actually said my favorite gag, maybe.
Which one was it?
Which is the... Well, I actually think it's just the title of the show.
Okay.
Hollywood Celebrities. What do they know? Do they know things? Let's find out. I think that's just honestly my favorite gag in the entire series.
My favorite gag in this episode specifically... I have to say, was definitely when he had Wanda's beeper, or he had his beeper, and Wanda beeped him with 000, and Diana's like, I think that means call me, and he's like, ugh, ignore, and he's like, how do you ignore this? And she's like, I think you just ignore it, and he goes, with what, my mind? Like, I thought that was really great. That is my favorite one, is when he goes, with what, my mind? I don't know, I loved it.
Oh, actual final point. I think I said earlier this season that I think Mr. Peanut Butter is the most situated as the animal that he is, as a dog, because he's impulsive and kind of a lucky Labrador and all that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We talked about that previously. I think Wanda is very well suited as an owl, especially for the joke where she is not actually asleep.
Oh, yeah. She just turns her head 180 degrees without turning the rest of her body.
Yeah. With her glowing yellow eyes. Yeah. And just says, I beeped you, BoJack.
Yeah.
I think she is also very well suited to the animal that she is.
Yeah.
I said before in a previous episode, BoJack doesn't have to be a horse and Princess Carolyn doesn't have to be a cat. But Mr. Peanut Butter's dogness is like part of his character.
It truly is, yeah.
Anywho, folks, I believe that concludes this episode of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. One second, I need to check this. Yeah, no, I'm still the Ben of that.
Oh, yeah, I'm still a Leslie. Neato.
Folks, you can find me at Ben C. Hamlin, that is BenCHamlin, over on Twitter.com, where I am always talking about comics and... Mm-hmm. That's it. End of list.
Oh, you talk about other things. You can find me over at Venetti on Twitter.com, where I'm talking about a variety of subjects. Today, I think that I talked about... I know I talked about BoJack a lot last night, talked about Sheebs. I talk about a lot of cool stuff. You should follow me. It's a fun time.
Leslie is an absolute hoot. That being said, if you follow either of our accounts, you are going to see some fun selfies in the near future because Leslie and I are hanging out.
Yes, we are!
I'm, of course, based in Portland, Oregon. Leslie is based in Austin, Texas. The two counter-opposing weird cities in the country. But I am flying down for a concert for the Mountain Goats.
Yes!
Which I do not say in an ashamed way. I love the Mountain Goats. I do say in a financially irresponsible way.
Dude! I mean, I'm going to London for 48 hours so that Darren Brown can sign a book.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me about financially irresponsible.
No, you're right, you're right. Anyway, you might see some fun selfies of Leslie and I hanging out at the concert and just hanging out in Austin. Apparently there's a barbecue joint we're going to.
Which one?
You told me.
Oh.
It's your city.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you still wanted to go to that one or what. Okay.
Sure, why not? Okay. It's your city,
fine.
Though.
Fine. The name. We'll go to Blacks is it, so that's where we're going. So shout out to Black's cool. Barbecue. Okay. It's going to be lit.
All right. I'd ask our fans to meet us there, but let's be real. Anyway, speaking of financial irresponsibility, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak, where you can support this show and everything Infinity Break produces for as little as $1 a month. That gets you access to all sorts of behind-the-scenes audio, including fun little tidbits. From this episode of Horses and Men, Leslie went off about South Park for a while.
I did.
And I sat in utter silence, unaware of the names of the characters of South Park.
We also went off about like sixth grade.
The way English literature is taught.
Yeah, there's a lot of
in school.
We had a lot of opinions.
Yeah, seriously, folks, it's only $1 a month. It's $12 a year. It goes a long way into helping us create great shows and entertainment for your entertaining pleasures. Folks, presently we're working on Speak of the Devil, which is a brand new podcast/live streaming show that's going to start happening every Sunday at noon. That is the most ambitious and expensive project Infinity Break has ever done since, I don't know, Alpha Squad or whatever. That's all been coming out of my wallet, so patreon.com/infinitybreak. That will buy us better cameras in the future. Hey, folks, we highly encourage you to check out Speak of the Devil. Highly encourage you to check out Busting Balls. Of Horses and Men, which you're already listening to. Listen to Cursed Seas. Like, listen to all of our shows. We're having a blast, and we would appreciate if you joined us on the way. You can follow all of our stuff at InfinityBreak23 on various social media sites and InfinityBreak.net. That concludes this episode of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. Folks, I am Ben Hamlin. I am joined, as always, by...
I am Leslie Yates.
Our theme song is by the incomparable Andrew Davis, and our logo is by the incredible Bethany Luthold. Thank you so much for listening. We will see you next week for Hank After Dark.
Woof.
Yeah, I know. All right, catch you later. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is part of Infinity Break, where we're telling stories our own way. You can find all of our shows, podcasts, webcomics, and more at infinitybreak.net. Stay up to date with new show announcements, behind-the-scenes sneak peeks, and updates on your favorite shows. You can follow us on any social media platform by searching for Infinity Break 23. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak. Every dollar helps us improve the quality of this show and create new shows like this one for your listening pleasure. Thank you for listening. Please tell your friends. And as always, stay in the loop.